We're holding on Zion Amud Beis, the first line of the wide lines. Mishnah said, that after the Beis Din gives the Sota the whole warning, that try to talk her out of going through the whole Sota ritual, if she says, I'm Tomei, then the Mishnah said, Sheveres Tzivas of Yosef, she voids her Ksuba and leaves. Sheveres comes from the Lashon Shover, which means a receipt. So the Gemara says, Shamach min Hakoyzman Shover. Does that imply that our Mishnah proves that when you pay off a debt, there's two possibilities. When you pay off a debt, one possibility is that you write the loiver pays it off. Up until now, the malva has been holding on to the document, for example, the IOU. So one possibility is you rip it up. I have heard. One possibility is you rip it up. The other possibility is that you have him you write him a receipt. And it gets into the question: what happens, for example, if the malva says, I can't find the IOU? Do we say to the lawyer, pay him anyway? He'll write you a receipt. If he ever turns up the shtar, but again, you'll have the receipt to show against that. Or do we say maybe not? So the lawyer is going to say, I have to hold on to this receipt for the rest of my life. And what happens if it gets lost? What happens if mice chew it up or whatever? Better, I shouldn't have to pay back until he can produce the shtar, and then we can rip it up. So the machlokes in Bava Basra. Based on our Mishnah over here, it sounds like Koisman Shover. So they're saying Sheveres Tzivasa, that she writes out a receipt. Not in this case, she didn't receive a Tzivasa, she forfeits it, but it's still the same thing. Sheveres implies that she writes out a Shover. I'm going to buy Tony Mekaras. Abai says, you're right. Change the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't mean Sheveres in the sense of writing a receipt, but rather she rips up a Tzivasa. Rava says, the Mishnah doesn't use the word Mekaras, he uses the word Sheveres, which implies a Shover. So Rava says, no, rather we're talking about the kind of place where they don't write a ksuba in the first place. We learned in ksubas that given that there's the takanas chachamim, that a psula gets 200 and an amana gets 100, then there were places where they just relied on that. They knew it was a given that a psula is going to get 200 and an amana is going to get 100, and they didn't bother writing an actual document of a ksuba. So then you have no choice. Then you have no choice but to have a writer receipt, because then there's no ksuba to rip up. Tosfos discusses a little bit of the pros and cons of it. On the face of it, for example, we could have had that the husband should be able to hold on to the get until she returns in the mitzvah, rather than writing a shover. And then Tosfos ends up saying that actually there could be a case. The Gemara discusses, we learned in Ksubas, that there were places where there came a time when it was dangerous. The government issued gzeiros against Jewish practice, against people keeping mitzvahs, including writing gittin. So then at that point, you couldn't say, for example, bring out the get, and we'll have that as evidence that everything has been taken care of. So therefore, you have in cases like that, is what we're saying, that you might have no choice but to write a shofar.
It was prohibited to write
again. Yeah. The authorities would, they would just have Adim, they would write again, but then, I mean, they'd write again, but then they'd immediately rip it up afterwards so the authorities don't get wind of it. Nowadays, they'd rip up the get, but that's for a different reason. That's because we don't want Lahoti Laz all again. We don't want somebody to find the get afterwards and say, hey, wait a minute, this detail, and it wasn't written right, the get is puzzled. In those times, they didn't used to do that. Normally, they would keep the get, and therefore, it could be used. But by
tearing it, you're not making it kosher.
No, by tearing it, what you're doing is you're in those times in the Shachas HaKana, you tear it, and that way they dispose of it, and that way today they tear it, and then they give the woman another document, not a get, saying certifying that she received a kosher get on such and such a date, and can use that to be married. That way, nobody's going to look at that and say there's something wrong with the way it was written because the original get's no longer available. This isn't the place to talk about it, but yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, "V'imamra tahorani ma'alanos l'sharim mizrach." That if she says, "I'm tahor," then they bring her up to the eastern gates. We're in ma'alanos. We're in that bring her up. Pasam kaima. She's already on the Harabayis. She's already in the Azorah. Actually, she was in the Lushkas Agozis because that's where the Mishnah said they gave her that whole warning. So what are they bringing her? What are they bringing her up to now? The answer is the maskin and law, machsin and law. What we do is we bring her up, we bring her down, we make her walk up and down the harabayis, clearly yaga, in order to tire her out. That way, again, it'll help maybe that she'll lose her nerve and be willing to admit if she really is guilty and not go through the whole procedure. The Tanya, similar to what we learn in a Braisa, Rav Shimon Lazarma, based in Masiyin as Edim and Makam and Makam, when you have Edim for Dinin and Foshis, that are giving Edus on a capital case, based in would move them around from place to place. Rashi says from one corner to another corner, from one room to another room, Kadesh Tataruf Dait in a land in order that they'll get confused. The Yaksubahan in that way, we hope that if they're not telling the truth, then they'll get confused and they'll change their mind and not go through with it. Same thing over here. Okay. Mishnah continues to Shammash Nefesotis. All of that, they bring her to the Shar Nikonar, which is at that gate, that's where they give the Sotis to drink. That is also where the Mishnah had said they would have a Yoledes would stand when they're bringing the Karbonis on her behalf, and that's where a Metzorah would stand when they're being Metahir him, and he'd stick in his ear, his thumb, and his toe. Tosfos, by the way, brings an interesting thing from here, from Tosefta, that actually the woman, it says, has to be standing Lifnei Hashem. The Kohen does not. Therefore, the Kohen, who's doing the whole procedure, actually stands on the outside, and she stands on the of the gate, and she stands towards the inside of it. So if the Heichal is here, and the gate is here, she's standing over here, the Kohen is standing over here.
She'd be in the Azara.
So that she's not actually in the Azara. She's further in the gate. Here, medicine with Mim, not literally inside the Azara, but in the inner half of the gate, of the gateway, where the Kohen is standing in the outer half. Because she has to be Lifnei Hashem, the Kohen doesn't. Although that is kind of interesting, because it means then that it comes out that she's standing there with her back towards the Heichal.
That's right.
Okay. Okay, so the Gemara says, Bishlam is Sotis. I can understand why the Sotis has to stand in that gate. Just say, Behemid HaKohen HaSeishal Lifnei Hashem. Because it says the Kohen should make the woman stand before Hashem. Before Hashem implies in that gate, which is directly opposite the Heichal. Mitzoroi Nami, I can understand why also the Mitzorah stands Zavke at that gate. Because the pasuk says that the Kohen who is performing the ritual of the Tara should have the Mitzvah stand. Again, it says Lifnei Hashem over there. Lifnei Hashem Pesach Omod. Ella Yodas, my time. But why does a woman who gave birth, why does she have to stand davka there when her korban is being brought? Elaim Mishum the Asya the Kaimen Akorbanayu.
In the gate.
Why is she standing davka in that gate as opposed to just someplace else? She could be standing near the Nashim, she could be there. So, Elamad Mishum to Astin, the Kaiman Akurbanayu, is it because you want her to be standing there and be there while her carbon is being brought? Because a person should really be there when their carbon is being brought? But yeah, but they don't have to. We learned way back in Shkolim, for example, that they had the chauffeurs over there where you could put money in, and the base in Tarkonim would take care of spending the money and buying the korbanos and bringing it on their behalf. If you couldn't manage. But ideally, you're supposed to be there when your korban is being brought. Rashi references over here the famous thing about that's why they have the whole concept of ma'amados, that every day they would have a contingent of Kohen and Levim in Israel and would stand there to observe the Kohen being brought, the Kohen Talmud being brought on behalf of the whole Jewish people. So if that's the reason, the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Ein Korban Shel Adam Korav Elim Ten Omed Agavav, that a person's korban is not brought unless he's standing there to watch. Yehochi Zav and Zav is Nami. Well, then the same thing should apply to the other cases in Mechutz Kapara. A Zav, a Zava. The answer is Einoch Nami. You're right. The Mishnah is not saying only a Yeledis. The Tanya Chodem Inayon Nokas. The Tanya is just mentioning one of the possible cases. But you're right. It applies to all the Mechutz Kapara.
It's not exclusive.
It's not exclusive to Yehovah's. We learn in a Braisa, Ein Mashkin Shtei Sotis Kachas. You cannot give two Sotis to drink at the same time. Kadesh Loyeh Liba Gas B'Chavato, because you don't want that one of them is going to feel comfortable around the other. The whole point is you want to break down her defenses so that if she's guilty, she'll admit. And even maybe, and besides that, also we want to, if possible, avoid the whole thing because it involves Abish's name being erased. So, like this, if you have two women there, one of them is going to feel strengthened by the presence of the other one. If she can go through with it, I can go through with it. That kind of thing.
Especially if the other one is
the same. Yes, indeed. Rabbi Yehuda says that I agree that you don't give two sotis to drink at once, but that's not the reason why. Ella, it's based on a pasuk. Omakra or Yisalavada. The pasuk says that you give her to drink, implying her only by herself.
What does it mean?
Loy min Hashem means it's Rashi says loy zera kam shamar tarha ikar anemun b'davar. This reason that you gave is not really the real reason behind it. Loy min Hashem was there. It's not based on that name, meaning that's not the real reason. The real reason is based on a pasuk, because the pasuk says oisa, that you give her alone to drink. Rashi says it's the pasuk via oisa akoyin. Rabbi Akiva Eger here in Goyin Hashas has a long discussion of which exact pasuk we mean, are we referring to, because there is that pasuk oisa. Other than that, though, you have, which means her only, but are we learning from that, or rather are we learning from the pasuk v'hishka es hamayim, where v'hishka has a mafik he, meaning her. So then also it would mean her only, yeah. Okay, the Tanakama Hoksivaisa knew what does the Tanakama answer to that? Taka, you have the pasuk. The answer is Tanakama Rav Shimon. The Tanakama of this Braisa is actually Rav Shimon, the Dorish Tam Dekra. Rav Shimon, we find in various places in Shas, explains the reasoning behind the pasuk. Meaning, to find reasons for the mitzvahs that everybody does. What Rav Shimon does is he looks for a reason that's implicit in the mitzvah, and sometimes even uses that to explain under what circumstances does that din hold. Classic case, the Rashi quotes it over here, is in Bava Metzia. The pasuk says, pasuk in Parshas Ki Tse, says the lowest possible beged almana. You're not allowed to take the clothing of an almana, of a widow, as a mashkin, as a pledge for a loan. Now why not? So the Mishnah mentions a machlokus over there. According to the Chachamim, that applies whether the widow is poor or rich. According to Rav Shimon, only if she's poor. Now why? The pasuk doesn't say anything about poor or rich. Rav Shimon figures like this: Taima Dikra. What's the reason? Why should the Torah be giving special preference to a widow in this case? Because we know from other places in the Torah, also in Kisei, there's another pasuk there in Kisei, there's another one in Mishpatim, that describes how if a person is poor and they need this thing on a daily basis or a nightly basis, you have to return it to them every day or night. So therefore, what's going to happen? If you take a piece of clothing from an almana, and she's poor, and she's going to need it, let's say every night as her pajamas, or every day to get dressed to go to work or whatever, every day or every night you're going to be going to her house to return it, and after a while, tongues are going to start wagging, and people are going to think that she's being mizana. So because of that, the Torah is saying don't take her clothing as a pledge in the first place. Mashenkin, Rav Shimon says, if she's rich, that's not an issue. You don't have to return it to her on a daily basis. She has plenty of other outfits. Therefore, no problem. That's called Dorish Time of the Krah. So Rav Shimon in our Braisa is doing the same thing. He's darshaning the reason behind the pasuk. Umatam, comma. So the Tanakama is saying, "What I agree that you have the pasuk oisa, or the hay, or the mafik hay of the hishka, whatever." But I'm explaining what's the reason behind it. Matam oisa levada. What is the reason why the Torah is saying that one sota should be given to drink only at one time? Kadesh lo yeh libagas b'chavata. In order that she shouldn't feel psychologically strengthened by having another woman there with her. My benayah, well, what's the practical difference? I mean, both Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda both agree you can't do it. The answer is, ikka benayah reit sesis. The difference would be, what if the one woman, or the Tosfos Rosh says maybe both women, are trembling in fear? So if you say that it's a matter of your dirtish time of decree, you don't want her to feel comfortable around the other, well, if one or both of them are shaking with fear over the whole thing, then obviously having the other one there is not going to help her feel comfortable, then you might as well do both of them at once. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you just forget dirtish time of decree, the pasuk says you do just the one, and that's it, there's no room for doing two, then it doesn't matter whether she's trembling or whether she feels confident. Yeah. We talked about this briefly yesterday, and the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about it. We'll learn in a couple of weeks. Basically, at any point during the thing, she can always say Tmei Ani, and then the whole thing is stopped there. But and there's a silver. If before the Megillah is erased, before the Pesukim are written and erased into the water, she also has the option of saying I'm not Tomei, but I don't want to drink the water. And also, she loses her silver and gets divorced, etc. But if after the Megillah is drunk, and of course you can say Tahor Ani, and I want to go ahead with it. After the Megillah is erased, she has only two choices. She can say Tmei Ani, or she can and we stop it right there, or Tahor Ani, and let's go ahead with it. There's no option anymore to say I'm Tahor, but I don't want to drink. That's the point. Only if she still maintains Tahor Ani after the Megillah was erased. That's the Gemara said yesterday, that once the Megillah has been erased, if at that point she starts hesitating, then we tell her, you know what, after all, if you're innocent, don't be afraid to drink it. Okay. The Gemara says, "V'reseses mimashkin." Fine. Even let's say the woman is trembling. Still, even how could you say that according to the Pshimin, you should be allowed to give two sotis to drink at once? You have a general rule that you don't do mitzvahs in bundles. Meaning, in other words, exactly this. If you do the two of them at once, Rashi says, it's like you're making it as if the mitzvah is like a burden. You want to get rid of it as fast as possible. You don't do that. Wait. Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah, it's actually a Braisa, it's not Ditanya. Ein mashkin shtei sotas kachas, we do not give two sotas to drink at the same time. Ein matarin shnei mitzaroyim kachas, we're not matar two mitzaroyim at the same time by having the korbanos brought and the blood and oil put on their ear, thumb, and toe at the same time. Ein roitzim shnei avodim kachas, we don't pierce the ear of two avodim, the eved ivri for parashat mishpatim, who says I want to stay. We don't pierce two ears at once. Ein open shtei eglos kachas, we don't do egg. Do we not do two eglah rufas at the same time? Suppose you found two bodies, and one's close to one city and the other to the other, or whatever, both of them are close to one city, whatever. You don't do two eglah rufas at once. So you don't do mitzvahs in bundles.
But if they had made
tira
with one man, both of them.
Doesn't
matter.
They're still, but wait. As far as the Einos and Mitzvahs Chavilas Chavilas, by the way, Rashi gives over here the reason that it's because it makes it look like a burdensome to you. Tosfos elsewhere, where the Gemara talks about Einos and Mitzvahs Chavilas Chavilas, gives a different reason, that you want to have Kavana on each one individually. Okay. Amar Abaya became an Afghana, like Kasha. Kan b'koyinach, or kan b'shnei koyinim. The difference is whether you're talking one koyin doing it, or two koyinim. If you have one, so Rashi explains, if you have one koyin doing both sotas, or similarly, if you have one beis din and one master doing two avodim at the same time, that's osim mitzvahs chavilas chavilas. If you have two different koyanim doing two sotas, they just happen to be standing there at the same time, that's not a problem. That's not osim mitzvahs chavilas chavilas. So then you're back to that. Reb Shimon would say, if one or both of them are recessed, then it's not a problem to do that. The only problem would be if one or both of them are confident, and then you don't want them to encourage each other. Whereas Reb Yehuda would say no. Which gets into a bit of a discussion, this whole business about Einos and Mitzvahs Chavilas Chavilas and this distinction between one Kohen and two Kohenim. Tosfos discusses a couple of things about this. Number one, are we talking about even that you can't have both of them standing there at the same time? Even though, I mean, they may not both drink at the same time. Let's say you have one Kohen, like what is the Gemara saying, one Kohen versus two Kohen. And obviously, if you have one Kohen doing both of them, we're saying, you know, this is Chavilas Chavilas. It can't mean that he's giving both of them to drink at the same time. He only has one right hand. Necessarily, it has to mean they'd both be standing there, and he gives one to drink, and then he gives the other to drink. And even then, that's considered, you know, this is Chavilas Chavilas. So you see that just having them stand there at the same time is already an issue. And that gets Tosfos into a bit of a discussion whether the same thing applies to korbanos.
You don't do korbanos.
That on the face of it, maybe you shouldn't be able to have two korbanos standing in the azara at the same time because it would be chavilas chavilas. So there is now the Magen Avraham on Shulchan Aruch in the halachos of Gerula of the Sefer Torah discusses this business of Einos and Mitzvahs Chavilas Chavilas and talks about there's a possibility that's the other way around. He starts by talking about it in connection with the din about when you have to learn from two or three Sefer Torah. What do? Nowadays, we take them all out at once. On the face of it, according to what Tosfos is saying, what you should do is you learn one, you finish with it, you put it away, you wrap it up, you put it away, only then do you bring out the second one. If you bring out both of them at the same time, then it should be Chavilas Chavilas. Therefore, the Magen Avraham says, on the other hand, the Rambam has the opposite shikha. The Rambam understands the other way around. If you have one Kohen doing both searches, that's not Osim Chavilas Chavilas. If you have two Kohen doing it at the same time, that would be Osim Chavilas Chavilas. Therefore, applying it to a Sefer Torah, no problem. We can take out the both Sefer Torah at the same time. We're following the Rambam in that.
Because those two Kohen are going to give her...
Because it could happen that they both happen at the same time, right? As opposed to one Kohen necessarily is going to do it one after the other. What about the same thing? Three Sefer Torah. And the Magen Avraham talks about it in connection with certain other dinim. If you have brisim of twins, can you have them both done at the same time, or should you have a break between them? And the minhag is, in fact, they do. They have a bit of a break between them. When you have the two cups of wine for Shavuot brachos, should you have them both on the table at the beginning of benching, or should you have the four one? No, just the two cups of wine. He used for Shavuot brachos, one for the kodesh of benching, and the other one for the other six brachos.
That's the same simcha.
No, but it's two different mitzvahs. One is the mitzvah of benching halakhos, and the other one is the mitzvah of sherev brachos. So should you have them both on the table at the same time, or should you only bring the second? Should you only pour the second one after benching?
We pour the second one
after benching. So, yeah. As far as the korbanos, the Magen Avraham wants to say that the difference is that it wouldn't be a problem with voluntary korbanos. It might only be a problem with obligatory korbanos chayva. Although later Mephoshim talk about you don't find there's a problem with korbanos chayva either. You had the whole Jewish people brought their korban Pesach at the same time, and that's a korban chayva. So they talk about different other possibilities, that maybe it's only this osim mitzvah chavilas. Chavilas only applies primarily to something that's being done by the Beis Din, not necessarily by individual people like the Korban Pesach. Or different other possibilities like that. Tosfos mentions that maybe the issue is only the Rabbanan. Then the Mishnah continued about Kohen Oches B'Vgadeh, that the Kohen grabbed the hold of her clothes to rip them. Taran Abanan, we learn in a Braita, so where do we get this from? The Pasuk is a Paras Rosh Isha, that the Kohen should uncover the woman's head. In the other Rosh, so we only know from that her head. Gufa Minayin, how do we know that part of her body is uncovered as well? Tamad Lema Ha'isha, therefore the Pasuk adds the word Ha'isha. Otherwise, what I just said, a Paras Rosh. Ha'isha, so that im kein matan adayma paras ha'isha. So what does the word that he should uncover her head mean? Malam b'chakren shoyser tzayre means that he doesn't just uncover; he takes apart her hair, like he loosens it. If it was braided or whatever, then he loosens it, so to make her look unattractive. Then the Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda aimim ha'yaliba v'chula. That Rabbi Yehuda says that no, if her chest is attractive, then you don't uncover it, and if her hair is attractive, you don't uncover it. Relax. So actually the Sefer Chasdei David asks that question, and he says maybe then what Rabbi Yehuda means is because we have no way of knowing, therefore effectively Rabbi Yehuda is saying don't ever do it. Not like not we're going to first have to check it out, because obviously we have no way of doing that. No, a point to Rabbi Yehuda, because there's a possibility that that it may be attractive, and therefore we won't do a lot of filler. Maybe not. Maybe you would say you have to ask her female relatives or something. We've seen her in the back. I don't know, whatever. Okay. The question is, remember that Rabbi Yehuda chayish le Yehuda v'rabbanan le chayishi. Does this imply then that Rabbi Yehuda would hold that we are concerned about her? We're concerned that the kohenim or the bystanders or whatever are going to end up with improper thoughts as a result of seeing her, and the rabbanan are not concerned about it, and therefore the rabbanan say it doesn't matter whether she's attractive or not. Go ahead and rip, and Rabbi Yehuda said not. But we find elsewhere them saying exactly, each of them says exactly the opposite. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, part of this is a Mishnah actually in Sanhedrin. For Ish Machasino to Perakacha Melafana, a man before he's given skilla, his clothes are taken off, and he's covered with one piece of cloth in front of him, like a loincloth in front of him to cover his erva. A woman is covered with two pieces, one in front, one in the back, because all of her is erva, meaning that her erva can be seen from both sides, underneath her body, and therefore we need two pieces. Whereas the Chachamim say, no, a man is stoned naked, or almost naked, just with her loincloth, and a woman is not. The halacha, by the way, is like the chachamim. The woman is stoned. They don't keep all her clothing on her because that would cushion the fall too much. And we'll talk about soon. That's the whole reason, well, one of the reasons why we remove the clothing in the first place. But we have her wear one choluk, like one long shirt, so to cover her body. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that they were seen the other way around. Rabbi Yehuda is not worried about her. People are going to see her wearing just a loincloth, and we're not worried about her. And the chachamim are concerned. Amar Rabba, Hacha Taima, yes, but the difference is, here the reason is, Shana Taitim, Beis Din Zakois, because what happens, she may end up coming out of Beis Din, well, meaning out of Beis Mikdash, innocent. It may turn out that she was innocent of becoming Tomei, she was Nisdura, but she wasn't Nisma. V'Iskarava, Pirche Kohona, and then the Pirche Kohona, the young Kohenim, are going to get attracted to her when she's... In other words, Mela, if she dies, then fine, she's dead and that's that, but what if she's alive? And then she walks out of there innocent. And the Pirche Kohona, Rashi points out, is not necessarily the Pirche Kohona. It's just a practical matter. They're generally the ones who are around the Azara, the young Kohen. But in theory, it could mean anybody.
Just be smart.
Yeah. Whereas over here, in the case in Sanhedrin, in the case of the person who's being given skila, she's being given skila. She's dying. They can't be attracted to her anymore. So you're going to argue, okay, but if they see her in that state, then they're going to come to have a yetzirah for other women. But Rabba says on the side, Gemiri, we know by tradition that any yetzirah show that elav masha ain of roes, that the yetzirah only has control over what a person sees. So in other words, them seeing this woman who's about to get skila, they see her undressed. That's not going to cause them to have thoughts about other women. Tosfos discusses over here. It is not. That's the point. And it was therefore Rabbi Yehuda is not concerned over there about her because it's a momentary thing. In a couple of minutes she'll have skila, she'll be dead. Whereas over here there's the possibility that she may survive it. And Tosfos discusses the pros and cons about how this thing works, about this Enyei Tahara Sholot and the Masha Ein Royet business. Tosfos brings another Gemara that, yes, once a person has seen a woman who is an erva one time, then he'll keep on having thoughts about her for a long time afterwards. But seeing this woman who's about to get skila is not going to cause him to have to hear her about other women. Having said that, though, in Sefer Chassidim actually discusses this and says, in Sefer Chassidim it talks about there's different kinds of hearer. There may be a certain kind of hearer which there is. Which there can have, and psychologically, yeah. I mean, if a person sees, a racy thing, it has a certain effect on his thought processes,
In
the
picture,
does
that mean
By the way, this that we're saying over here, Ein Yetzirah Sholot Ela Masha Ein Evroyes, is one of the sources. The post can discuss quite a bit the question, are you allowed to hear a woman's singing voice if you don't see her, if you don't know her? One of the sources that the Mekilim bring is our Gemara over here. If it's not Ein Evroyes, then there's no problem. Kol Asher is Kol B'Asher. It's not the halacha, but there is such an opinion. Because the alternate opinion is no. If we're saying Kol B'Asher, then that's it. The Kol by itself is enough. Yeah. Hold on. Omar Rava. So Rava says, okay, so far so good. The Rabbi Huda, the Rabbi Huda Kasha. So fine, you explain, then you say, effectively, the answer you just gave assumes that there's only a contradiction within Rabbi Huda, the Rabbanan, Kasha, what are you doing with the stira within what the Rabbanan are saying? Here they're saying you go ahead and tear her dress and uncover her hair, and there they're saying you don't undress her, but you have a stira within them also. How do you answer that? Hello, Amar Rava. So Rava says, okay, Rabbi Huda, the Rabbi Yehuda Kasha Kedushanim. To answer what Rabbi Huda says, fine, we can use the answer that we said so far. The difference is the Sota may survive it, the Nisqelus is not going to. The two opinions of the Rabbanan also don't contradict each other. Because over here, by the search of what's the reason why the Chachamim say humiliate her in public, Mishum, because of the pasuk that we quoted in the Mishnah, the Nivasru Kol Anoshim, you want all the women to take an object lesson from her, to be chastised by seeing what happens to her, and not do such a thing themselves. Whereas over there, they see her getting skila. That's the greatest yisur of all. They don't need to see her further publicly humiliated in order to get the object lesson.
Why do they do skila at the
time? Skila is basically they take the person up to, they push them off a platform twice as high as the person's height. So they hit the ground. And if that kills them, then that's it. The mitzvah has been done. If not, the Adim take a very big stone that takes the two of them to carry and drop it on him or her. And if that doesn't do the if that doesn't do it either, then everybody pelts the person with stones.
Then they shouldn't give Aedus.
I'm not sure about that, though. I mean, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, I think it is, that if the Edom's hands are chopped off so they're not physically able to carry out the punishment, then in fact the person is potter because Yad Edom Tia Bo Bereshona. I don't think the Gemara talks about what happens if they can be Edom, but they can't be Edom for Din Nefashos, practically speaking. I don't think the Gemara talks about over there if the Edom declined to do it. Maybe then you just have everybody else do it. I don't know. Anyway. So okay, you might argue, fine, who says we can't do both? Maybe we should do the skila as well as publicly humiliate her. Can't. Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Barbura, Amar Kra, because the pasuk says ve'ahachta l'orecha kamaicha, which means brola misa yafa, choose for him the easiest possible death. You can't have that should include something else which is not essential to the process. The question is, limited of Nachman Tanoi. So does that mean that the Tanoim, that the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda are arguing about that principle of Rabbi Nachman? Apparently, it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda doesn't agree with that. He doesn't hold that the Apollo Yachal Kamocha applies in that case, because what is he saying? Go ahead and humiliate her publicly, undress her, and you're doing skila to her. Whereas the Chachamim are saying, yeah. The answer is loy. To kul alma islu de Rabbi Nachman. No, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda would agree with Rabbi Nachman's principle. The means you want to try to make her death as easy as possible. But the hacha b'hokam is the machlokas rather is as follows. The Tanakama hold that humiliation is more serious to the person than the bodily pain. Because think of it this way. When you have, if a person is undressed and thrown down, they're much more likely to die from the fall because they have nothing to cushion it. Especially the Gemara explains over there in Sanhedrin, the person's hands are tied so far as they can break the fall with their hands. So without any clothing to cushion it, it's much more likely to be an immediate death. Mashenkin with clothing, it's likely not to be. On the other hand, you have the matter of being publicly humiliated by being undressed or not. So therefore, the Tanakama holds that the bizoyan is more important to a person than the physical pain. So a woman would rather, for her, it would be to let her stay dressed, even though that may mean that her death will be more prolonged. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would hold that the physical pain is more important to a person than the desire. So she'd rather be, for her, it would be better to be undressed, and that way there's a better chance that the fall will kill her. Tosfos discusses on Amud Aleph a little more about the pros and cons of this. So in that case, then why does everybody agree that a man is undressed? But basically, you have a pasuk that says oisoi. You have a pasuk that says v'rognu oisoi kol ha'eda. Oisei, just like we said before, that oisa means the soita by herself without somebody else. Similarly, oisei means the person himself without the clothing. So basically, what Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing about boils down to, we know you have that pasuk. So fine, with a man, then there's no question, there's no reason to do anything different, because with a man, to be undressed in public is not as much of a bizoyan, and therefore, be mekayim the pasuk the way it says. The question is, does that apply to a woman as well? Or do we say, on the basis that Maskana over here, that she would rather, that the Chachamim are saying she'd rather suffer more physical pain rather than the Bizoyan, then maybe in that case the Pasuk is only meant to apply to a man and not to a woman? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda basically would be saying that it's applying to both.
Does that apply to the course of order? Let's say a person says, I want this, but that.
No, the Pashtas, it sounds like they're making a general rule for everybody. Tosfos, by the way, also points out that in this case over here of the Sota, there's the Yerushalmi asks the question, why don't we just avoid the whole problem by having put up a screen, put up a curtain, so that you don't have anybody observing, and then go ahead and do that. In fact, there is an opinion in the No, we're talking about the Sota. So, in fact, there is an opinion in the Tosefta that you do just that. We talked about yesterday that the Tosefta mentioned that they would make a girdle, Tosfos quotes it on Amud Aleph, they would make a girdle to determine which kohen does it. And there's an opinion also in the Tosefta over there that they would put up a sheet, they'd put up a screen, and the kohen would turn its face aside and do the whipping. So he doesn't have to look at her and embarrass her further. That's the point. That's what Tosfos answers. If you do that, then you're lacking the Vini Vatsu Kolanoshim, right? And then the whole bazillion, which is an essential part of our kapara. So, yeah. Okay. Mishnah said, Hosim Mechosel Levon. And Mechol of that, if she was wearing white clothes, they'd dress her in black clothes. Tana, we learn in a Braisim, how you shchorim noim la, if black clothes look nice on her, Mechasim, if we go to Mechor, and then instead they cover her with ugly-looking clothes. Then we said, how you allow Kleizah, Mechol of that, if she had gold jewelry on and they take it all off, well, of course, you're trying to make her unattractive. How much more so, needless to say, that you should take off all her jewelry? The answer is mal detema, because you might think the other way around. She's standing over there with her hair undone, her clothes ripped or whatever. Maybe it would be a bigger bazillion for her to be wearing jewelry at that point. Cheap, like the expression people say, shliach out of a person who's stripped naked but wearing shoes. They look really ridiculous. But like maybe all the more so, she'll look ridiculous over here with jewelry when everything else is. Kamash Malon, that's the chiddush that we don't say that. Then we said Vahakach maybe Chevel Cholo. At that point, the Kohen brings a Chevel Mitzri, and we talked about yesterday whether Mitzri, Rashi had said that Mitzri means it's made from palm fibers, the ivy or whatever that grows around palm trees, and we mentioned the Yerushalmi says that it means that it actually comes, Tosfos quotes it over here, that it means a rope that comes from Mitzrayim. That in order to remind her that she acted Kamase as Mitzrayim, that she acted the princistic way that the Mitzrayim did. So, Bominate of Abba Mid of Hona. So Abba asked Rav Hona the following question. Chevela Mitzri Baushi Akiv Vesota. This Egyptian rope, or palm fiber rope, or whatever, is it ma'akiv? Meaning, so it sounds like the Gemara is asking, if you can't find one, do we continue going ahead with the ritual? So Tosfos says that there's no reason, you can't really say that. I mean, the Pasuk doesn't mention a Chevela Mitzri, there's no reason to think it should be ma'akiv. The real question is, basically, if you can't find a Chevela Mitzri, how far do you have to go searching for one? And then Tosfos talks about differently, according to the Chachamim that we just said, you rip the clothes regardless whether she's attractive or not, meaning you have to go through the thing exactly the way it says, then maybe the chevel should be an essential thing of the process. Okay. And if you don't have it, then maybe you can't do anything. So Is it Mishum Shalei Shomte Begedei HaMe'alehu? Is it really you're using it basically for a practical reason because you don't want her clothes to slip off after they were ripped? And then it would still so called the Nami Sagi, and then it would be good enough if you can't find a Chevel HaMitzri, then instead you can use a little belt, which the Braisa that at the end of this Amud and the beginning of the next one mentions that it was a common kind of thing that women would wear to attract men. Like a little belt that they wear above or below their bust. So then, if you're saying that the practical reason, you just need it for practical reasons to hold up her clothes, then fine. If you can't find a rope, then like Tosfos is saying, you don't have to go to the trouble of going and finding one. I mean, that's it. Just bring a silver cotton. Oy Dilma. Mishum de Amamar, or maybe it's based on what the Braita said later, he chagrele the siltzel, this woman who may or may not have been Mizana, but at this point we're kind of assuming that she did. She dressed up for the guy she was Mizana with in a fancy belt. L'ficha kayin maybe chevela mitzri v'kayin shalom ma'am adadeha. Therefore the kayin has to bring a chevela mitzri and tie it above her breast. Therefore, according to that ma'akiv, it would be ma'akiv, because the whole point is you want to punish her midah to negative midah for what she's alleged to have done.
So how would you do that? I mean, with a rifle?
That's the point. In other words, if you say the purpose of it is just to hold up her clothes, it doesn't matter what you use. Ideally, you should use a rope, but if you can't easily find a rope, then you can use a tiltle. If the idea, though, is that you want to punish her for having, by assumption, worn a tiltle to attract this guy who she was with, and therefore you want to replace that with a rope, then it dafka has to be a rope. And if you can't find a rope, you can't use a tiltle, because that would defeat the whole purpose.
It
is in the future, but it's also, no, the Mishnah, the next Mishnah, and the Braisa expands on it, goes through blow by blow each thing that a woman or Mizana does, and therefore that the ritual of the Soita is arranged that each detail of what's done to her corresponds to something that an Isha Zona would do. That she herself should learn and do tshuva, and that other people should learn it. If she comes out of it, okay. But even if not, then before she dies, she can still do tshuva. Yeah. Amalei. So Rav Huna answers him. Tinisua. Well, we have a price that expresses it. V'achakach maybe chevel amitzri v'koshel olamai midadeh. Afterwards, the kohen brings the chevel amitzri and ties it above her breast. Kadesh shalo yishamta v'gadeh me'alav. In order that her clothes don't slip off her. So you see from that price that that's the basic purpose of it. It's just for practical reasons. So if you don't have a chevel amitzri, go ahead and use a tzotzot cotton. It's true, ideally you shouldn't, because you want the midah to negative midah thing, but if you can't, you can't. That's like saying, you don't have to go loy mahadam or yoyos midah. You don't have to go to too much trouble to try and find this kevel amitzi if you can't find one. Then the Mishnah continued, v'chol aroyt zelurus bagira, v'chol anybody who wants to see the soita, the ritual can see. And then the Mishnah, except for a male or female servant, because she'll be comfortable around them. And then the Mishnah had finished off that all women are allowed to see her. That's contradictory. Amr Torah to Luritz Baroya. You start by saying anybody who wants to come and see can see Amr Loshna Gabri Veloshna Noshi, which means it doesn't matter men or women. So that says all women are allowed to see her, implying Noshim Ein and Noshim Loy, only women, not men. Amr Abaye, Tugma A Noshim. The word over here, Anoshim, it's actually A, the Aramaic prefix, Noshim. Yeah. So Abaye says, you're right, you have to explain those words of the Mishnah, Kol Aroi Tzalurisva, as referring to the women. So the Mishnah is saying that any women who want to come can see, and the Mishnah is finishing off by re-expressing that in other words, that all women are allowed to see her. The Mishnah doesn't say that. It says anybody who wants to see. It doesn't say anything about men or women. So Rava says no. What the Mishnah means is anybody who wants to come can watch, regardless whether men or women. Women, it's not just they're allowed to, they're required to come and see her. As the Pasuk says, the Mishnah finishes off, you want all women to be chastised and not to do like yours knows. The Ramaphoshim, therefore, would say that actually what Rava is saying is he's repunctuating the word of the Mishnah. The word is not mutarais, meaning that they're allowed to, but rather musrais, meloshon hatzara. All women are musrais, they're warned that they should come and see in order that they can take an object lesson. There are always men around the Azara. There's Kohenim, there's Israelim who are coming to bring Karbanos. If they want to watch, they can.
They're not learning. It's not like they're learning using
the women. No, but there's still, maybe there is something. I mean, they still learn mid after all, but whatever. It's all part of the same. I mean, put it this way. You know, remember, there's always two possibilities with the Soita. Either she's actually Tomei, or she's not, but either way, she acted in a princistic way. The whole point that there had to be Kinnery, and then there was Stira, especially according to the opinions that the Stira involved with Raiden, who saw the Stira as well, then it means, you know, there's already been something went very badly wrong over here. But maybe not total nus, but at least, you know, things are going in the wrong direction. So the idea is these various things. If she's Tomei and she ends up dying in the slight of water, then all this is part of her kapara. If she's Tahar, then also it's all part of her kapara. And that's what gives her the schus that afterwards when she goes through the whole thing, the nixa ben Israel zara, that she has the bracha of children and yadat is bereva and so forth, as we'll talk about in a couple of weeks. Mishnah says, the midah she'adam moded ba moded inlay. According to the measure that a person measures out, that's the measure, the famous expression, this is the measure by which the Eibishter measures out for him. And the Eibishter pays back a person according to how they act. For example, he kishta atzmal aveira, this woman beautified herself for an aveira, hamakim nivla, so therefore the Eibishter arranges that she gets made to look unattractive. He gilsa atzmal aveira, she exposed herself for an aveira, not exposed as in taking off her clothing, but exposed as in like being by the door of her house to welcome in this guy. Hamakim gila aleha, therefore the Eibishter arranges for her to be shown off in public over there by the shanikana. The yerech itzchila b'aveira tzchila, she started out the aveira with her thigh first. Yeah, she says because of nena v'kiru b'al, so it's the first part of the body that enjoys the physical contact. V'achakach beten, and then her stomach. While they're having relations, lefichav tilka yerech tchila v'achakach beten. Therefore, the thigh first gets punished, and then the belly. Lots of this beten, lots of yerech. But later on, when she drinks the soda water, and yeah.
Okay, the thigh.
That's not the bit, but not the urecha. Her belly swells, her stomach swells, her thigh falls off. And the rest of the goof, which also enjoyed the aveira, doesn't get away without anything either. But later on, when we get to what happens if she drinks and she's guilty, the Mishnah describes fairly graphically what happens to her. That she winds up swelling up and then bursting and yeah. Amar Yosef, afakaf midah b'teila b'midah like bottle. Even though the midah of the Dalad Mrs. Beis Din is bottle, the bin midah, this that we're saying in the Mishnah, that the Eibishter deals with the person, midah connected midah, loy bottle. That is not bottle. That's what the midah, even though the actual midah of giving the Dalad Mrs. Beis Din is bottle, because there's no Sanhedrin nowadays to do it, and even before that, 40 years before the Chorban already, they didn't. Nevertheless, bin midah loy bottle. The fact that the Eibishter pays back a person, midah connected midah, that still exists. Same type of mitzvah, yeah, and the same thing with the soita. Even though the mitzvah don't exist nowadays, the Eibishter still has ways. They tell a story, actually, involving the chidah, during the time when he was in Livorno in Italy, they one time brought to him a case of a woman who was suspected of znus. They brought her to him. He started reading off the psukim of the Sota, the psukim from the Torah of the Sota, and it happened to her what happens to a Sota.
Without giving
her the actual water, just from the koyach of his reading the psukim, yeah.
Without the swelling.
Yeah.
It was kinui also?
What?
It was,
yeah, I guess there must have been kinui in Sira, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth is, we learned earlier in the Gemara that you're not supposed to do kinui nowadays. Maybe there wasn't. After maybe there wasn't kinui, whatever the possibilities are, yeah.
The
Amar Rav Yosef, as Rav Yosef says, v'chein tani Rav Chiya, and we also learn in a braisa Rav Chiya, miyom shechora beis mikdash, from when the beis mikdash was destroyed, afa kisha bot la Sanhedrin, even though the Sanhedrin is bottle, afa misses like bottle. The Zalat misses are not bottle. I mean, they are bottle. You don't have a Sanhedrin to administer them anymore. El of Dina Ava Mrs. Lebatu. No, what we mean is the Dina of the Dalad Mrs. is not bottle. The Abish still arranges that a person gets something similar to one of these Dalad Mrs. For example, Mishnah is Chayef Skila, somebody is Chayef Skila, a Noful Menagag, either the Abish arranges he falls off a roof, which as we said, we just described before, is the first stage of Skila, a Chayef Gerasai, or a wild animal tramples him, where also it's like Niskol, where the animal throws him down on the ground and tramples on him. Mishnah is Chayef Sreifa, somebody is Chayef Sreifa, which would involve that they'd make him swallow hot lead, and then the insides get burnt. Oh, no, for but later, either he falls into a fire and gets burnt. Oh, no, Hashma Kishoy, or a snake bites him, and the venom of the snake burns him up. Mishnah is Chayef Hariga, somebody who's Chayef Hereg, which is being beheaded with a sword. Or Nimsol Malchus, either he winds up being handed over to the government, and the government's standard method of execution, the Roman government's standard method of execution in those days was beheading. Or Lustin Bainolov, or he gets attacked by robbers who kill him with swords. No, obviously not. Tosfos discusses this in Ksubas. We have this Gemara also, and Tosfos has a long discussion. And on the one hand, you have people who do terrible aveiros, including all the things that are chayiv mitzvos based in, and they live long lives and die peaceful deaths. And you have, on the other hand, people who, obviously there's more to it. The Gemara is just giving categories, but no, I mean there's details within that. For example, you have the choter pesheya. There can be a lot of reasons. He may have done tshuva in his heart. The Eibishter may have giving him another chance. There's all kinds of possibilities. And vice versa, when somebody dies from one of these things, not necessarily he doesn't mean that he was chayev, that he was actually chayev one of these dalad mitzvos. It can mean different things. Sometimes it can be sometimes it can be with a tzaddik, and he's getting yisurim that should have been for the rest of the generation. There's all kinds of possibilities. And then there's also, by the way, there can be a person is not a person didn't do the actual thing that's chayef skila or strafe or what have you, but did something which bedakos is like it. You want to mention Baba Basra, for example, that one time Rapapa, I think it was climbing up a ladder and a rung fell out and he almost fell down and then got killed. And he says, where that's almost like skila. What could I have done that's similar to something that's chayef skila? Until one of the other Chachamim comes out and points, and one of the other Amoraim comes out and points to him that it's possible that maybe at some point somebody came to ask you for tzedakah and you didn't give him. The bedakos, that's like an aveda. That would be chayef skila.
Everyone who comes to tzedakah, you have to give him.
Okay, I mean, your papa was rich. It's a little different than the average person. And besides, your papa on his level and we on ours. But it's still the same principle, though. Every night, Kirshma Shalomitra, right? We say that. Rav Papa was heavy, so the fall might have killed him more than the ayah. But every night in Kriyashma Shalom Mitzvah, right? You have to hold your heat up, and if I was careless with the mitzvah of tefillin, and I'm poigim and shame in the letter yud, and I'm in the sky of skila, and I'm accepting skila on myself, tzitzis, Kriyashma, etc. So bedakos, there are these things as well.
I don't feel it.
So you say it, how the nipple could people like that, right? I mean, you keep on saying it eventually, so eventually it'll penetrate.
The person see
several
parts of it, but it's talking about all sorts of things a person should feel.
But eventually you work to it. Okay, that's a central cotton, and it's a little note from a little master Zenskis. Okay, anyway. Mishin is Chayef Chanika, somebody who's Chayef Chanik. Oteveh, but nowadays, Oteveh Benahar, either they end up drowning in a river, Oimes Besrunchi, or they die from diphtheria, which suffocates them. Tosfos, by the way, discusses, what do you mean, Yom Shechor of Beit HaMikdash? I mean, all these stopped 40 years before the Churban, because the Sanhedrin left the Lushkas and Gazas. Yeah. So there's different answers that Mephoshim give. Tosfos himself says, very simple, the Mishnah, the Breisa, rather, is telling us, they definitely ended by the Churban. Yes, in principle, they ended 40 years before the Churban, but if the Sanhedrin could have always come back to Lushkas and Gazas during those 40 years and continued during Mrs. Based. And once the Churban was done, then that's it. It's a goner. Okay. Tanya, we learn in another braise. So, Horeb Rabbi Yomer, Minayin Shemidah Shad Moded Ba Modedin. Like, how do we know that the measure that a person acts according to, that the Eibishter measures out for him according to that, Midas and Eibishter? Shenema, the passage says, Besasa B'Shalcha Tirivena. Besasa, we're dashing as if it's a word, the double saw. So, within the saw itself, B'Shalcha, when you want to send somebody off, when the Eibishter wants to send somebody off to be punished in Gehenim, to be Venna, you fight with them, you contend with them over that saw that they did. So they did a saw, and they get punished with the saw. The Sasa. Eliyahu saw, so okay, we'd only know from that pasuk that it applies to a saw, meaning a bigger Vera, a saw is a large measurement. Minayim l'rabbis tauka, how do we know that it includes the tauka, which is a half a saw, v'chatsi tauka, half of that, kav v'chatsi kav, roiva v'chatsi roiva, toimen v'uchla, these are all smaller and smaller measurements, and uchla is very small. Minayim, how do we know that the Eibish did the same thing, midi k'neg midi, even for the small things. Kamad loimer, another pasuk, ki kol sa'oin sa'oin barash. All the sa'oin is sa'oin with noise. Simple meaning of the pasuk is sa'in means like tumult and noise and then confusion and whatever, like the confusion and the noise and then tumult of battle. But we're darshaning it, so the Marsha says there's two possibilities. Either we're taking the word sa'in and sa'in, we're darshaning as being related to the word sa'. So either ki kol includes even the smaller ones, not only the actual sa', but ki kol, even it gives for all sa'in, meaning even the smaller measurements. Or sa'oin can mean sort of like a small sa'ah, just like the word ishoin, which means the pupil of the eye, which means a small. Sa'oin, in other words, would mean the same way as ishoin, the same way as the pupil of the eye. Ishoin is called that because it literally means little man, because you see a little reflection of a man in the pupil of somebody's eye. The same way, sa'oin would mean a small sa'ah, a measurement smaller than a sa'ah. And there's a note in Ein Yaakov that mentions also that maybe the word Daushanin, that maybe also the Gemara is Daushanin the word Barash, as if it said Bashar, the Lashon Shir, like the Eibishter measures out for a person according to the Son. Well, Minayin Shekhu Prutta or Prutta Mitzaref is the Cheshbon Gadol. How do we know that every Prutta adds up to a big sum? So elsewhere in Bava Basra, in connection with Tzedakah, the Gemara mentions that in a positive thing. A person gives a Prutta here and a Prutta there, and eventually it adds up to a great amount. The Alter Rebbe talks about it in one of the letters in the Gittes HaKodesh and Tanya. Here we're using it kind of in a negative sense. So you have, let's say, a person has done a small aveira, the Eibishter hasn't punished him for it yet, and another one, but it keeps on adding up. Eventually, it adds up to a big amount. The Eibishter is not ignoring it. It's all being taken care of. Kama b'ma, the pasuk is achas la'achas l'mtei cheshbon, one by one to make a calculation, to come up with a sum. And we'll continue tomorrow with how this applies in detail to the whole sota ritual.